Hello, my friends. We come to the second chapter on Companies Act 2013, which talks on the formation and advantages of incorporation. Well, this chapter is about what is exactly a company. We have two components here, COM and PANIS. COM is an association or coming together of people, while PANIS is a Latin terminology which literally means bread. So over breakfast, the Englishman used to come together to talk about any kind of economic or business objective for a common purpose, essentially to make profits. So well, the company form of organization is essentially an association of persons coming together for a common objective, mainly profit, the goal. We now look into the various areas on company formation and its advantages. Definition. A company means a company formed and registered under this act or under any previous company law. Now, this is what is given to us under the definition of the Companies Act 2013. Well, to put it in Lord Justice Linley's words, what is a company? It is a voluntary association of persons who come together for any common objective. Essentially here, it's a business. To put this money into some trade or business and to share the profits and losses therefrom. The persons who contribute this money are called the members, that is, the shareholder whose name is incorporated in the register of members or the depository is a member, and this is the person who contributes his money towards the company. This money is utilized for some trade or business activity, and the proportion to which each member is entitled is called his share. Now, this money that you are putting into the common stock is called the registered or authorized capital in financial language. This proportion to which each member is entitled is called as a share. Now, this share is transferred from one person to another, and therefore, in every public limited company, shares are transferable, which allows quick liquidity, and that is the reason that public limited companies have an infinite membership, providing for large resources for the purposes of company formation. Now, we look into some of the very, very important features of a company. Registration. Well, friends, unlike a partnership, where under Indian Partnership Act 1932, registration is optional, which means the partner and his firm are one and the same. Both of them are unified as one concept, so that if something happens to the partner, the firm is dissolved. However, this is not the situation with a company wherein registration, it must be incorporated under the Companies Act by the registrar of companies so that it enjoys a legal identity of its own, which is separate from its members, separate from its shareholders, or separate from its board of directors. So here is a form of organization where the membership is very large, but then the actual management is taken care of by an elected body called the board of directors of a company. However, registration is mandatory or compulsory under the Companies Act 2013. Distinct person. It means the company has an identity or an entity which is separate from its members. To highlight this, we have Salomon versus Salomon and Company. Well, friends, I'll just tell you what exactly is the background of this case. Salomon was a small shoe manufacturer. He started a sole proprietorship making good money, and thereafter he wanted to form a private limited company called Solomon & Company. He, his wife, four sons and a daughter, they were the seven subscribers who formed Solomon & Company. This was started with an authorized capital of 40,000, wherein Mr. Solomon had taken 20,000 worth of shares and 10,000 worth of debentures. The company was doing exceedingly well. But after a point of time, his liabilities were around £7,000, whereas his assets were only 6,000. So unfortunately, the unsecured creditors wanted to file a suit against Solomon, saying, "You will have to pay us back the money." This was taken to, obviously, the court, which said, "Solomon the man may be having the maximum shareholding, but then he is not liable to pay the money. Why? Because Solomon the man is different from Solomon and Company." So this is where, after registration, Solomon and Company enjoys an identity of its own, which is separate from Solomon the man. I'll just tell you what exactly is the issue here. Supposing I have Ram and Company, which is similar to Solomon and Company. Now, supposing here, if Ram dies, does the share go back to the company? No, it devolves on the legal heirs or legal representatives, namely Ram's wife and Ram's child, or children rather. Similarly, the domicile of Ram and the domicile of his company are different. That is, the registered office of where he lives and where the registered office of the company is there is different. So here, that is the reason, that is why the company has an identity of its own, which is separate from its member or shareholder. And this is where Solomon was very clear that even if the unsecured creditor has to be paid, it will be paid by the company and not by the singular man. This was again highlighted in Bacha Gazdar versus Commissioner of Income Tax, CIT. There was a business wherein agricultural income was there, and under the Income Tax Act, it is completely tax-free. Now this lady, Bacha Gazdar, she said, "When I'm taking a dividend from a company wherein there is agricultural income, I should be exempted from tax." Now, this is where the courts held, "Madam, you, the individual, is separate from the company. The company is a separate entity wherein, for taxation purposes, it will be exempt from tax. But whereas, as far as your income is concerned, you are not the same as the company, so that you will have to file an individual income tax and pay tax on the same." So this is where the company as a separate identity was sought to be clarified in Solomon and Solomon versus, obviously, wherein this was sought to be made very clear. Perpetual succession. What do we mean by perpetual succession? The company never dies. Grover, in his book, very beautifully says, "The river Nile will flow and go on forever. No matter who comes, no matter who goes, even a hydrogen bomb cannot destroy a company." So, perpetual succession means the company goes on forever and it is not affected by the death or any kind of insolvency of either a member or a shareholder, unlike partnership, wherein if the partner dies, if the partner becomes insolvent, there could be a dissolution of the partnership. Finally, artificial person. The company is an artificial person, my friends, because Justice Marshall says a company is an entity which is invisible, intangible in the eyes of law. That means you cannot see it, you cannot touch it. But then it stands. How does it stand? Because here, if any kind of an entity which is provided by way of a common seal, wherein it is a metallic engraving on which all the documents are there. Now, how does the company function? The company cannot sign. The company cannot entertain a signature. So for this person, so or for this particular reason, the company makes use of the board of directors. These board of directors are obviously authorized to have their signatures affixed over the common seal. So why is it artificial? The company is artificial because it is not in physical form like any human being. It doesn't have a body, it doesn't have a heart, it doesn't have a soul, but then only a legal position is provided to the company, and therefore the provisions of the Citizenship Act or fundamental rights under the Constitution of India is not given to the company. And that is why we say it is artificial, because it is not in physical form. It only enjoys an entity of its own. This is because of registration. The shares are transferable. That is, I purchase the share at 10 rupees. If the market goes up to 30 rupees, I sell it off at 30 rupees, and therefore I pocket the money of 20 rupees, which is essentially a great profit deal as far as an individual shareholder is concerned. For a private company, there could be restrictions as far as transferability is concerned under the Articles of Association of the company. However, as far as public limited companies are concerned, this provides for a great deal of liquidity whereby I can get liquid cash against my share. Limited liability. Unlike my partnership, wherein there is unlimited liability. What is the meaning of unlimited liability? As I've just said in Solomon, my assets are 6,000. My liabilities are 7,000. How do I compensate the difference of 1,000? I'll have to sell my personal property. I have to sell my personal shares in order to offset this 1,000. However, in a company, my liability is limited to the face value or the unpaid portion on the face value of the share. For example, my share is around 10 rupees. I have already paid an amount of 7 rupees. Now, in the event of winding up, what will be my unpaid balance? My unpaid balance is rupees 3, which is 10 minus 7, which I've already paid. So that, supposing the company is going into liquidation, it is winding up, I only have to pay rupees 3, which is the unpaid balance. So this is a major area wherein the company has an edge over the partnership. In a partnership, I cannot transfer my share without asking my co-partners. Whereas in a company, the share is mine, the entity of the company is separate, and therefore I don't have to take anybody's consent if I have to share, transfer the share, or as far as my liability is concerned, it is limited to the unpaid portion on the face value of the share. Separate property. The company has a property of its own because, as I've mentioned earlier, if the individual dies, if Solomon dies, does the assets of Solomon go back to the company? No. The company's property is separate. Solomon's assets are separate. And therefore, the company's property is its own property, which cannot be mingled with that of the shareholder and vice versa. So therefore, every company has a property of its own, which is unlike partnership, wherein the property of the firm and the property of the partners is unified and combined as joint property. So that is a major area where company is different from partnership. And finally, the company has the right to sue and be sued. What is the meaning? The company has a right to file any legal proceeding with any outsider. It could be a shareholder, it could be a creditor, it could be a supplier, with anybody in its own capacity. At the same time, third parties can file a suit against the company. And this is the meaning of capacity to sue and be sued. Now, friends, let me go into the area of the points of distinction between partnership and company. As I've already mentioned earlier, registration. It is not compulsory in partnership, whereas it is compulsory under the Companies Act. Membership. In a partnership, there shall be minimum 2 partners. Maximum for banking are 10 partners, and others it is 20. In a company, Now, for a private limited company, it shall be minimum 2, maximum 200. For an OPC, that is one-person company, it is minimum 1. As far as a public limited company is concerned, it is minimum 7 with maximum unlimited. Let me go on to the legal status. Partnership, no separate legal status. Why? Because registration is optional, my friends. So when registration is optional, it doesn't have an entity of its own and therefore it enjoys or it has no legal status, unlike a company which enjoys a separate legal status. Property. As far as the partners are concerned, the property belongs to the partners, wherein the company, it belongs to the company in its separate capacity. And that is the reason that we said the company enjoys a property of its own, which is not the same as the member or the shareholder. Contract. Can the partnership contract? It cannot contract with a firm because it is only the individual partners that can contract, but not the firm. Why? Because the firm and the partners are the same. So therefore, in the absence of a legal status, the firm is incapacitated to enter into a contract with a firm. However, a shareholder can contract with a company. Point number 6, management. It vests, means it lies, in the hands of partners, except in case of a sleeping or dormant partner. Because who are the people who are managing the firm? It is the partners themselves. They put the money themselves, they put their skill, they put obviously their expertise, and it is they who run the partnership firm. However, in a company, it vests in the hands of the board of directors elected by shareholders. You and I, when we put our money into a company, these are not managed by you and us, you and me rather, because we are a heterogeneous body running into billions and we are all spread out in different areas. So can we control the company although the money belongs to us? No, we cannot control. So what do? We elect a board, and this is called as a board of directors, who are experts, professional people who manage the company for the benefit of the entire body of shareholders. So unlike partners, wherein they run the partnership firm, in a company, it is the board of directors who run the company. Number 7, existence. It has no perpetual existence, means this is a firm or the partnership firm which will not go on forever, which means if the partner dies, if he becomes insolvent, there'll be a dissolution of the partnership. Now, what is the difference between dissolution of partnership and a dissolution of the firm? When certain partners retire, when they are admitted, when some become insolvent, but the remaining two partners continue, it is called as dissolution of partnership. Dissolution of the firm. I have 4 partners. Now, all the 4 decide that they want to dissolve the firm and it is no longer to be existing. It's called the dissolution of partnership firm, whereby a dissolution of the firm includes a dissolution of the partnership, wherein it has no everlasting existence. However, the company has a perpetual existence, as I've already mentioned, my friends, that company's existence does not depend on the lifespan of the shareholder or the director. The director may come, the shareholder may go. Whosoever comes and goes, the company shall go on forever and ever. It's like a river which will continue to flow, immaterial of who comes and who goes. As far as liability is concerned, the partnership is liable to an unlimited extent. In a company, the liability is limited to the face value of the share. Creditors, they are of the partners individually as well as of the firm. However, in a company, the creditors are only the creditors of the company. The shareholder has nothing to do with the creditors. Coming down to transfer, a transferee of a partner's interest can become partner of the firm with the consent of all the partners. The transferee becomes a member of the company, except that the right to transfer could be restricted in a private company. Statutory obligations. In a partnership, there are lesser obligations, whereas in a company, it is strictly regulated under the Companies Act 2013. Death of a partner may mean a dissolution of partnership. Death of a shareholder does not affect the existence of a company. Accounts need not be audited by the auditor. The accounts must be audited by the auditor because, as far as public limited companies are concerned, they are essentially open to public scrutiny, and therefore, as far as financial statements are concerned, they are accountable to the public, wherein the profit and loss account and balance sheet needs to be compulsorily audited. Agency. Each partner is an agent of the other partner. The shareholder of a company is not an agent. And if a shareholder is an agent, or if the company acts as an agent of a shareholder, there is an area where the veil of corporate entity can be lifted under judicial grounds. Thus, we have now come to the area of advantages of incorporation. Well, friends, what are the advantages? The company has an independent corporate existence. That means it enjoys an entity of its own, which is separate from its members, separate from its shareholders, and therefore has an identity or entity in its individual nature. Limited liability. The liability of every shareholder is limited to the extent of the unpaid portion on his share, which I've already explained that in the event of winding up, every shareholder is required only to pay whatever is unpaid by him. On a 10 rupees share, if he has already paid 7 rupees, his unpaid liability is rupees 3 on the said share. The shares are transferable from one person to another, wherein, unlike partnership, where he has to take the consent of partners, here he is at liberty to transfer shares, where only in a private limited company there may be restrictions which are laid down by the Articles of Association. Perpetual succession. The company enjoys perpetuity, everlasting existence. It doesn't die. Members and the company. The company has a separate existence which is different from its shareholders. So what happens is, the member elects the best people on the board of directors who enjoy professional expertise. So as the shareholders are not able to control, this management is delegated to a body, namely the board of directors, who enjoy professional skill. Management is vested in professional individuals. Separate property. The company has a property of its own. Capacity to sue and be sued. It means the company has a right to file a legal proceeding with a third party. At the same time, a third party can file a case against the company. Now, when it comes to members in the company has every right in its individual capacity to provide loans, to provide any kind of advances in its individual capacity, wherein the shareholder and the company are separate and different from each other. Lifting or piercing the corporate veil. Well, friends, what does this actually indicate? The company is run by the directors. The company is run by people who have the majority stake, as what we call it, in the company. But unfortunately, although the members and the company are separate, who are the people actually running the company? The company is run by the beneficiaries, the people who have the major stakes or major shareholdings, and these people may sometimes use it for fraudulent or speculative purposes. When the courts find that the company is run to defraud or deceive or any kind of improper or illegal, unlawful purposes, the courts pierce or lift open the veil. The veil is a curtain, literally, wherein who are the people behind the curtain is sought to be lifted, and to make them accountable to the shareholders is called lifting or piercing the corporate veil, which is done under the following circumstances. We actually have here the relationship between holding and subsidiary, the number and names of members of the company, the true ownership of shares and controlling power, lawful objects of the company, mismanagement and oppression of the majority, by way of tax evasion, monopoly, acting as an agent for the shareholders, affairs for fraudulent purposes, trading with an alien enemy. Well, friends, I will just have this bifurcated into two areas. One is called judicial grounds, one is called statutory grounds. What is judicial grounds? The courts question the directors on certain aspects wherein, if they find that there are certain unlawful or illegal areas, the courts lift the veil and try to give an order for winding up the company. Now, which are these areas? Let me go down to the first area, trading with an alien enemy. Now, we have a very famous case study called Daimler versus Continental Tires. The company is a company which is registered in England. It was here that it wanted to sell in Germany, which were tires manufactured in Germany. But unfortunately, it so happened that in this English company, about 90% of the shareholders, 90% of its major stakeholders were all Germans. Thereafter, a war broke between England and Germany. Now, can these people who control the company continue to run the company? The courts held, sorry, as we have seen in our Contract Act, any trading with an enemy, who is an alien, an enemy country, any person who is running our organization in the capacity of an enemy country, all contracts will stand suspended. And this is the meaning of trading with an alien enemy. And therefore, the company was asked to be immediately wound up and all the recoveries were immediately suspended. And they said, once the war is done, thereafter, the contract will stand revived. Otherwise, it is a case of supervening impossibility or the doctrine of frustration under the Indian Contract Act 1872. We'll go down to the area of tax evasion. Mismanagement, oppression of the majority, tax evasion, monopoly, acting as an agent for shareholders. When these directors try to have companies which are floated, you would have just seen in the newspapers, very sorry to quote, wherein you have seen Shashikala and Jayalalitha having 20 companies which were floated, wherein there were no such companies at all, they were all dummy companies and they were floated only by them to have the unaccounted money which was invested, and they had taken this money for the purposes of investment, and this money was routed out to poor people so that they were dummy companies which did not exist. So this is one of the cases wherein it's a case of mismanagement. So here we have a similar case in our study which is called as Daimler. This was called as Dinshaw and Company versus the CIT. There was a Parsi gentleman who was very rich. He wanted to avoid income tax and therefore floated 5 companies in Benami names and said, oh, I don't have money at all. He took loans from these companies and said, I'm actually surviving by way of a loan transaction, and wanted to avoid. The Companies Act said, let this company be immediately shut down because it's a case of evasion of tax. Similarly, when majority shareholders try to suppress the minority and try to have control, this is another case whereby we say there is an oppression or mismanagement. To defraud creditors, where the area is to see that the shareholders who are running the company are actually wanting to cheat suppliers or creditors, and there is no transaction which is accounted for, here the courts have every right to lift the corporate veil. Similarly, as far as holding and subsidiary, what is a holding company? A company which holds the majority share capital in another company, The former is called holding. The company which is controlled is a subsidiary. So where one company acts as an agent of the other, or the subsidiary acts as an agent for the holding company, here the courts try to break open the corporate veil in order to find out who is running the company. Similarly, we have number and names of members of the company in my second area. In a private company, we have minimum 2, and in a public, we have minimum 7. Now, supposing we have a shortage in the number whereby it falls below 2 in a private or below 7 in a public limited company. And such a company runs for an over period of 6 months, and the company is allowed to run without the minimum number, the courts have every right to make this liability converted into unlimited, so that the veil of corporate entity is sought to be broke open. Lawful objects. Whenever there are unlawful objects wherein we try to run any kind of gambling business, we try to run any kind of illegal activity, and this business goes on without obviously being accountable, these businesses are sought to be shut down, wherein they are all void transactions in the eyes of law, which cannot be run, and therefore no recoveries are possible, so that any kind of unlawful business is void ab initio. Well, friends, we have now seen the area as far as lifting the corporate veil is concerned, so that we make the shareholders comfortable in order to see that they are not exploited by the directors or the beneficiaries who are the actual people who run the company, so that even though that we say that it is a separate entity, it is essential to break open this veil and make the beneficiaries or the directors accountable to the shareholders, so that as we have seen in a Satyam scan wherein we try to find out from the areas on the financial sectors wherein there were speculative or manipulative tendencies, it was found that they had to be accountable to the shareholders. Thank you very much.